Case number 9-0311, State of Ohio versus Gregory Horner. Representing the appellate, Mr. Potts.
Justice Fahey, may you please the court. I'm John Potts from Toledo, Ohio. I'm here on behalf of Gregory Horner on a certified conflict.
Could you pull that microphone closer?
Certainly.
We can't hear you, sir.
The question that has been certified to the court is whether the holdings of State v. Colon, that's Colon 1 and 2, are applicable to the offense of aggravated robbery in violation of Revised Code 29-1101A3, or only to the offense of robbery, a violation of Revised Code Section 29-1102A2. This is sometimes referred to as physical harm robbery or serious physical harm aggravated robbery. The language of those two particular statutes, which define robbery and define aggravated robbery, are so closely similar that, as I've argued in our brief, there does not seem to be a reasoned basis upon which to distinguish between them as to what culpable mental state should apply. And it would, I suggest to the court, be apparent that since robbery is a lesser included offense of aggravated robbery, at least robbery under Revised Code Section 29-1102A2 is a lesser included offense of aggravated robbery under 29-1101A3, it would be an anomalous result indeed for the court to interpret those statutes so that the greater offense has a lower culpable mental state than the lesser included offense. It would make no sense. This flows from the language of the statutes themselves. It also flows from the fact that the deadly weapon form of robbery and the deadly weapon form of aggravated robbery in State v. Wharf and State v. Lester have been construed as being strict liability offenses. There is no principled reason why the physical harm and serious physical harm provisions of these statutes should not also be construed to have congruent culpable mental states.
Mr. Potts, I'm curious. The second proposition here, as stated, seems to suggest that the Colon cases were, I don't want to say an aberration, but before Colon, if the indictment tracked the statute and gave notice to the defendant of what the defendant was charged with, if there was an error, there could have been an amendment made by either party, assuming that the rule was followed, and that was it. I mean, Colon was the first time that we got into more or less elevating an indictment beyond the idea of notice. Are you suggesting that we go back to the O'Brien, Payne, Wamsley group of cases?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's the first time. I think State v. Harris, which was a pre-rules case, would also be consistent with the whole holding in Colon. I'm arguing that Colon clearly holds that the provisions of Article 1, Section 10 of the Ohio Constitution control and require, consistent with the provisions of Criminal Rule 7B, that the indictment contain language sufficient to put the defendant on notice of all elements of the offense. At a minimum, that requires that all elements of the offense be expressly set forth.
In the statute, however, when an offense is defined by the General Assembly in a statute, doesn't the statute itself contain all elements of the crime to be proved?
the code does, the statute itself may not because of the provisions of Ohio Revised Code 2901.21b, where a statute is silent as to the culpable mental state, that statute may be a strict liability offense if there's a clear indication of legislative intent that it be construed that way, or the default culpable mental state is recklessly. And you wouldn't find that in the statute. You'd have to find that by cross-referencing to 2901.21b. The plaintiff in any case has to give thought to what they have to prove, and the burden would be on the state, the prosecution, to present the case for indictment to the grand jury in a manner that the indictment itself would include all elements, including the applicable.
So you're saying that the defendant cannot know that the default mental state is recklessly, and for purposes of notice, if there was no purposely or knowingly within the statute, wouldn't the defendant know automatically that it's recklessly that we're talking about, and take care of the problem? If it's strict liability, there has to be a specific statement, or it has to be seen to be a specific statement of strict liability.
Well, if there's strict liability, there would be no element of a culpable mental state. So the indictment would be sufficient if it were silent as to the mens rea. One would like to think it's that easy for an accused to figure out, but the Court of Appeals of this state apparently are in conflict on that point. And Article 1, Section 10 of the Ohio Constitution provides that the charging instrument, the indictment, must give the defendant notice of the cause and nature of the accusation. That's the elements of the crime according to Colin. That is not unworkable. It's logically coherent. It's a test that's simply applied. It does require the prosecution to give some thought to what the culpable mental state is, but suggests that's not a bad idea. And a defendant under Article 1, Section 10, is entitled to be specifically informed as to what it is the state has to prove. Obviously, in Colin itself, the jury wasn't charged. There was no argument on recklessly. Had the indictment been drafted in a manner to include the culpable mental state, all the essential elements of the offense, that type of thing would not occur. So,
counsel, do you see any distinction between a case that is submitted to the jury and the conviction flows from a jury verdict, as opposed to what your client did, which was a no contest plea? And that's basically what is, to me, the glaring distinction here between this alleged conflict.
I understand what Your Honor is saying. A no contest plea, if the court looks at State v. Byrd, requires the court that receives the no contest plea to determine whether the facts in the indictment are sufficient to state an offense. Whether the elements of the crime are there. A guilty plea might be in a different posture as compared to no contest plea or a jury verdict or a verdict at a bench trial. And this is why I contend the court below erred in applying a plain error standard of review. The standard of review should have been de novo. This question was preserved. The issue of whether the indictment stated an offense was expressly put before the trial court for a decision upon tender of the no contest plea.
Well, counsel, isn't the standard, though, the defect had to permeate the proceedings to the extent that it created structural error?
I do not contend that this is a structural error case.
It's not a structural error case.
No, it's our position. This is not a structural error case. It's the position of the appellant that the question of whether the indictment was adequate to counts 1 and 2 of the indictment were adequate to state an offense was directly and expressly put to the trial court upon tender of the plea of no contest. That was the issue the trial court was specifically and expressly required to decide. Once the court decided that under Criminal Rule 51, no further objection or exception was necessary to preserve any claim of error in that regard for review. And it's our position, the court below, the Court of Appeals, erred in applying a plain error standard of review. A de novo standard of review should have been applied because this is a question that was adequately preserved for review, and it's a question of law. We do not contend that this is a plain error case. We do not contend that this is a structural error case. And if there's no further questions from the bench at this time, I'll reserve what time I have left.
Yeah,
for
you reserved almost 4 minutes, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Cooper.
Good morning. My name is Dave Cooper, and I represent the state of Ohio in this matter. Our briefing, both my brief and the friend of court brief, have asked this court to take another look at the logic of the Colon decision because we believe that the application of 2901-21B, and I'll call it 21B from now on as a means of referring to it in a shorthand way, we believe that 21B has been properly applied by the court, and then in Colon and one case before that, it was not properly applied by the court, and we asked this court to take another look at that analysis, because if the court did, it would be dispositive of the issues in this case, and we wouldn't even have to get to the issue of plain error and structural error.
Okay. Could you walk us through what you see the clear path?
Pardon me?
Could you walk us through what you see the clear path out of all of this to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we believe. Would you repeat the question again?
Could you walk us through how we get to
the logic and 21B.
And what, if anything, we have to change in our present holdings?
You would have to change some of your precedent, yes. 21B, there's two sentences in 21B, and both sentences refer to sections. And both Maxwell, which is one of the cases that came out, I believe, in 2002, that properly applied 21B, noted that section refers to the offenses that are designated by decimal designations. In other words, 29.11.01. The whole thing is a section. Subdivisions, subparts of that section are divisions or subparts or subsections. And so what one has to do, and it's what the court did in WAC, which is a 1981 case, and in Maxwell, which is a 2002 case, and indeed in Fairbanks, which is a case that came out in 2008, about 3 weeks before Colon, what the court has to do is determine initially whether the entire section refers to any mens rea element, any culpability element. Also, the case of state versus...
So you're suggesting at some point in the statute, when we look at it, there is a mens rea, and that it has an umbrella-like coverage.
Yes, precisely. It is what we advocate, and what indeed this court has done in the past, is engaged in a section-wide analysis of the statute, the section.
And in this case, then, the culpable mental state, in your view, would be knowingly?
Yes. In this case, 29.11.01 contains an incorporation by reference. It refers to a one who is committing a theft offense.
Yes.
When they do these aggravating things that make it into an aggravated robbery, it incorporates theft offense by reference. And if you looked at, and of course, in this case, the theft offense was stealing $3,000. But if you look at the theft offenses, all of those theft offenses, at the least, have a knowingly or a purposeful mens rea element. Theft itself, you have to knowingly obtain the property of another with purpose to deprive that person of that property. So there's actually two mens rea elements. And this particular statute also has a subsection B, which refers to a person who takes knowingly deprives a peace officer, a law enforcement officer, of his weapon. So what we would advocate would be for the court to look at that 21B and see if it applies.
Would we overrule Cologne 1, in your view?
I think you would probably have to overrule that part of Cologne.
And has that been sufficiently done, in your view, in Cologne 2, where we have limited the application
Cologne,
of it?
Cologne, we're grateful that Cologne 2 limited the issue of what constitutes structural error. But keep in mind, Cologne 2 did not address the 21B issue at all.
You said we didn't have to reach the issue of structural error in this case. Or did I misunderstand?
That's right. If you decided that 21B does not apply and you followed the corollary to what you do when 21B doesn't apply, you would determine that this particular statute is a strict liability. Now, when I say strict liability, I use that sort of advisedly because it's actually section subsection A3 that requires no mens rea. It's subsection A3 that is strict liability. The statute itself is obviously not strict liability because it has the knowing or purposeful element of the incorporated theft offense plus taking knowing.
But you don't want us to suggest that there is a strict liability application here. Your preference is, if I understand your argument, is to adopt the knowingly or the purposeful element in the statute in accordance with 21B.
No, my argument is that you look at the section, the entire section in this case.
Well, that's what we said in Maxwell. You want us to follow
Maxwell. That's what you said in Maxwell.
You want us to follow Maxwell.
We want you to follow Maxwell. And we want you to follow WAC, and we want you to follow
Fairbanks.
Now, I think one good reason for overruling Cologne 1, is that the issue of the application of 21B was conceded by the state. I believe it was Cuyahoga County case. And relying on a plain error analysis, they felt they would be affirmed, and they didn't. They conceded the 21B argument in the very beginning. And so in Cologne 1, this court, although it analyzed the strict liability versus reckless element to some extent, that issue wasn't fully briefed and certainly wasn't fully argued. So this case gives us a chance to take a look at that, the application of 21B, and go back to Maxwell and WAC and Fairbanks and straighten this issue out because Here we are, the aggravated robbery statute in its present form was adopted over 26 years ago, I think 74, 30-some years ago. 21B was adopted in 1974, and here we are arguing about what the mens rea is for a serious physical harm aggravated robbery. And so what we advocate is that the court look at the entire section, determine if there's any culpability element in that section. If there is, 21B doesn't apply. And then we follow WAC, which says because before 21B was enacted, silence in a statute indicated strict liability. So we look at any section that doesn't indicate a mens rea, and that becomes a strict liability crime. And that kind of makes sense, because if a section has a subsection or a division, let's say subdivision A, and that sets forth a purposeful element of mens rea, and it has a subdivision B, which, let's say, sets forth a knowingly mens rea element, it makes sense that if section C is silent, in all likelihood, the legislature intended that no mens rea be imported into that subsection. So the statute itself may have mens rea elements, but a subsection would be strict liability. And if you look at this particular statute, aggravated robbery with a serious physical harm, that has no mens rea in section A3, and therefore, following that analysis, since 21B doesn't apply, that subsection would not require an allegation in the indictment or proof to the jury of any kind of mens rea. Of course, the state would still have to prove knowingly and purpose in proving the underlying theft offense. And the nice thing about returning to this Maxwell, I'll call it the Maxwell case analysis, because I think that was most, in that case, I think the rationale of this approach was best brought out by the court. The nice thing about it is that, again, talking about what Justice Lanzinger alluded to, if an indictment simply paraphrases or quotes the statute, in most cases, not every case, but in most cases, that is going to be a correct indictment. Because if you look through all of the, and all of the crimes are not in Chapter 29, they're crimes included in other chapters in the Ohio Revised Code. But if you look at all of those, if you spent the time to look at all of those, most of those statutes have some mens rea, those sections have mens rea in them, and therefore 21B wouldn't apply, and one could simply paraphrase the language in the statute and have a good indictment.
Mr. Cooper, if we would adopt the analysis that you're suggesting, what do we do with our decision in State v. Lester, where we've said
in
that...
In State versus what?
Lester.
Lester was correctly decided for the wrong reason.
talking to the people that decided that case, right?
Lester was decided correctly. Wharf was decided correctly for the wrong reason. Clay was decided. Clay is the having weapons under disability, and this court decided not using the analysis I advocate, but using an analysis where the court determines whether 21B applies to a subdivision, indicated that having weapons under a disability required recklessly being aware or not aware of being indicted. And I would argue that Clay is also a correct decision for the wrong reason, because as one of the Court of Appeals decided in the certification process, you can't be convicted of being under an indictment unless you have some ability to know about it. So imposing a reckless mens rea makes some sense. Perhaps it should be knowingly, but it makes some sense. So going back to the 21B analysis that we think the court originally engaged in and kind of got off track, doesn't require us to change much in the way of cases that have already been decided. And again, Colon, we think, was improperly decided, but it wasn't really argued extensively by the parties.
Thank you.
One reason that we think that the non-application of 21B is not good is that we think that the court, in trying to divine legislative intent, confuses things and makes it harder for prosecutors and judges and indeed appellate courts to predict what crimes will have recklessly imported and what crimes won't. So that's part one of our argument. Part two of our argument is that this court should, and like I say, the court made a great inroad in correcting some of the problems in Colon 1 by issuing a Colon 2 a couple 3 months later. We would advocate that the court simply eliminate the requirement that error permeate the trial and simply say, if an indictment is drafted in the words of the statute, and if the defendant does not object, then a plain error analysis should apply. Because structural error, and I...
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
How much
Thank
time?
You.
Am I finished?
Your time's up, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I think it's been explained to all counsel. The yellow light warns you when you're down to 2 minutes, and the red light is it. And because we have a case added on today, we have to watch our time a little more carefully than other days. So go ahead, Mr. Potts.
I would respectfully suggest that the change in the law advocated for by Mr. Cooper in the state of Ohio and the interpretation of the language of 291101B and how it should be applied is not grammatical. It elevates form over substance. It's inconsistent with WAC. It's inconsistent with Maxwell. And it's inconsistent with common sense. The statute, 29-901-21B, says when the section defining an offense does not specify any degree of culpability. You can't parse that to the noun alone. It's a section defining an offense. Some offenses are defined in one section. Some sections define more than one an offense. Some sections have different elements in different parts of the sex section. In WAC, you had in, this is laid out, pages 3 and 4 of my reply, I brief the statute at issue in WAC was 29-1502A1. No person shall do any of the following. One, engage in bookmaking or knowingly engage in conduct that facilitates bookmaking. The court said, this court said, those are two different offenses. One is strict liability. The other has a culpable mental state of knowingly. Not only do they appear in the same section, they appear in the same division of the same section. And Maxwell quotes WAC. So you have to look at the provisions of a section defining an offense. And since a single section or a single division of the same section can contain a definition of more than one offense, it's logically indefensible, and it's inconsistent with the precedent of this court, WAC and Maxwell, to say, well, if a culpable mental state appears anywhere, that 291101 does not apply.
Do you agree with the holding in Maxwell?
I agree with the holding in Maxwell, but I would submit that doesn't control the question here. Yes, the fact that a section may be silent, or part of a section may be silent and part of a section may not be silent, is certainly relevant to how you construe the statute with reference to 290124B. But it's not a mechanistic, mechanical test that, oh, we have a culpable mental state here, so 291101B doesn't apply. That's not what Wax says. That's not what Maxwell says. That a culpable mental state appears in part of a section and not in another part of a section, is that relevant? Yes. Different elements of an offense can have different culpable mental states. Look at Wack. Look at Usher. So you have to construe, interpret, and apply 290121B to those provisions of a section defining an offense, however that is done. And that's done in different ways, in a different scheme, in different parts of the code, and it would be ridiculous to elevate form over substance and hold that just because a culpable mental state is mentioned somewhere with reference to something in the statute, it renders 290111 inapplicable.
Thank you, Mr. Potts. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. The matter is now submitted.